Looking for a fun way to win 25 times your money this football and basketball season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of stats, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and injury insurance on your picks are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million players who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/play100 and use code play100. That's code play100 at prizepicks.com/play100 for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy.
Looking for a fun way to win up to 25 times your money this football season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of statistics, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and an enormous selection of players and stat options are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million football fans who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/get100. And use code GET100. That's code GET100 at prizepicks.com/get100 for a first deposit matchup to $100. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy.
Looking for a fun way to win 25 times your money this football and basketball season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of stats, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and injury insurance on your picks are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million players who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/play100 and use code play100. That's code play100 at prizepicks.com/play100 for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy.
Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
Hello, Rank Squad, and welcome to Ranks FC. It's your favourite football podcast, back for another week in the middle of a Champions League match week, which means we've had to change things up a little bit today, do something a little bit more evergreen as well. So we're excited to bring that to you. We're going back to an old classic. We're going back to an old friend of this podcast. We're ranking all 20 Premier League captains. We were asked on multiple occasions to revisit this topic. We thought, why not now? Why not now? So very excited to get into that one. My name is Jack Collins and I'll be your host today. And I'm joined by the rank god, Mr. Sam Tai. How you doing, mate?
Hello, mate. Yes, I'm very good. Thank you. Very excited for this week. European football back. You guys did an amazing job last week of previewing all the games. Thank you for stepping into my shoes. Dean Jones, you were superb.
Mm-hmm. I was, yeah.
We'll see, mate. I mean, we've got to see how it plays out first. We don't know until we see how those predictions land.
Indeed, and that is our transfer group, Mr. Dean Jones. How are you, mate?
Good, mate. Happy Valentine's Day as we record this. By the time people listen to it, Valentine's is over for another year. But yeah, you get anything unexpected?
Over for another year. It's not a birthday or Christmas, is it? It's not actually a proper thing.
It is.
I got a load of Colin the Caterpillar like mini cakes with hearts on them. So I'm actually feeling incredibly loved today.
Oh, did you? I got a candle that said, "You are effing awesome."
That's quite cool.
Yeah.
I'm into it.
Smells nice.
You a big fan of candles?
No, Taylor is. I think it's a gift to ourselves personally. But we won't.
Definitely is. Yeah, we forgot in this household. We forgot. So yeah, I woke up this morning, saw it on Twitter, and said to my wife, "Happy Valentine's Day," and she said, "Oh yeah."
Oh wow!
So,
right,
love is alive.
In the air over
quite,
here.
What are quite, you quite the romantic in your
one year into marriage? That's good.
We've had a
that's
few.
How, yeah,
we've,
that's how yeah. you know.
So we've had a few things going on here. I'll get into some of it for the gibberish. But what doesn't help is that Rach's birthday is on the 8th of February, so it very much overshadows Valentine's Day. And I got in trouble once for combining the two. So that's not acceptable when I try to combine the two. And so now I just ignore one.
Basically, you miss her birthday. So you said, "Oh, I'm doing it on the 14th this year."
Yeah, we all know exactly how that played out. Right. Talking of love, let's start with things we love, shall we? And DJ, do you want to kick us off this week?
Oh, mate, I just love watching Barcelona at the moment. I've got to admit, like, my love for La Liga generally was on the wane last year. It was a tough league to watch. Literally at times because I couldn't find a channel that was showing it. but honestly, some of the football now being played under Xavi, it's so easy on the eye. The goal they scored at the weekend against Villarreal, it was just a work of art. Like it was pure Barca. Like that is what you want to see from a Barca team led by Xavi. It was perfect. And look, Real Madrid might have become world champions at the weekend by winning the Club World Cup, but make no mistake about it, Barcelona are the best team in Spain right now. They're 11 points clear at the top of La Liga. More than that, Barcelona currently 16 games unbeaten, and that's the most that Xavi has ever managed as a manager, whether it be at Barcelona or Al Sadd even. So consider like even an inferior league, he didn't manage to go on a run like this. Even at a time like that, this is really impressive what he's managed to do. They're about to be tested, aren't they, this week? On Thursday, we've got the Europa League match against Manchester United. Going to have a Champions League feel to it, to be honest. I mean, given how both these sides are playing right now, should be a really good game. I have to say, like, from what we've seen, I still will fancy Barca. Partly, you know, United are depleted at the moment. But Frenkie de Jong will probably prey on that against the team that wanted and wants to sign him. But also, Lisandro Martinez missing. And the way that these quick moves are happening for Barca, just not sure United are going to have the nous to deal with it, even with Varane back there. I'm particularly loving Pedri. He got the goal in that 1-0 win over Villarreal. And he's Barca's highest scoring midfielder this season. And that's exactly what Xavi wanted from him. Like, you're looking for ways that guys like Pedri can become better. And he's like, now let's try and work on your goal output. First season trying to do that, he's doing it. It's been tough for Barca fans since Messi left and they've been on a bit of a ride. But they're back to life. It's looking good. Not sure there's a team I really enjoy watching more in world football right now than Barcelona.
Yeah, I mean, he's on an absolute scoring tear, isn't he? And we were wondering kind of what he's going to end up with this season, because you're looking at what he's putting out for this Barcelona side and you're thinking, what is it? We're on 7 goals, I think, in all competitions. Yeah. Compared to 15? I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised at all.
Well, he's going to get double digits. Yeah.
He keeps scoring one goal in one goal wins as well, in 1-0 wins. He's got four goals in 1-0 wins.
Yeah.
So basically he's responsible for 12 points. Like you can pretty much pin it down to that. Like, yes, Lewandowski's been amazing. Yes, the defense, which we'll come to, has been amazing. But Pedri has basically won them 12 points this season. And how far clear are they? 11?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the difference. That's the difference.
Pedri's winning the league.
That's what's happening. Indeed he is. Well, I'm glad you brought up Barcelona, Dean, because I wanted to talk about them as well. And this is not suddenly turned into Siempre Positivo or another Barcelona podcast, but I thought it would be remiss if we didn't mention the form of Ronald Araujo, who is just a colossus at the back for Barcelona. And in this 1-0 win over Villarreal, Marc-Andre ter Stegen, watches, he's got an incredible record this season, and much I think he's catapulted himself back up to the list of best goalkeepers in the world, didn't really have a save to make. Now, part of that was Jose Morales missing a couple of big chances, but everything else went into Araujo. He was just in the way constantly. And I tweeted at the time, and that's what I wanted to bring up. Is it time we start talking about Ronald Araujo in the best centre-backs in the world conversation? Because it felt like he was Barcelona's only defensive leading light when they were having a really tough time of it. Now they have returned to what seems like a good level of form. Obviously, we have to wait to see how this season plays out before we confirm that. But generally, the way that Barcelona are playing and the way that they have that 11-point lead with Real Madrid having a game in hand in La Liga, if they go on and win this, a lot of it is going to be to do with this unbelievable defense that Barcelona have. And the leader of this defense by a long way is Ronald Araujo, who just seems to be getting better and better each game. Now, he's not perfect. His distribution isn't the best in the world. It's not bad, but it's nowhere near the best. You know, he's not a Van Dijk. He's not a one of these players who can get the ball and play the old Bonucci crossfield pass 70 yards into the path of a winger. But defensively, he is monstrous. It's like genuinely incredible to watch people coming up against him. He just is like a wall. And considering that, a lot of what we would have considered the best defenders in the world are either having bad seasons or coming to the end of their careers. It does feel like there's a space opening up in the world for this kind of title of best in the world, or at least to get yourself into that bracket. And Araujo has very much put his name into that conversation.
Yeah, I was just thinking, actually, as you were saying, well, is he one of the best? I was like, okay, well, what's his competition? And all of the names that we sort of go back to over the last 4 or 5 years have all sort of exited the picture. And we'll put an asterisk over Van Dijk because obviously tore his ACL, injury, another injury recently, just hasn't quite been top of his game over the last year, but he's still in that conversation. But all the other names, you know, it used to be Ramos, Pique, Bonucci, Chiellini, and they're not really there. In terms of form this season, Alaba isn't in this conversation, although again, we'll put him just on the side there.
Edson Militao probably is.
Maybe Militao. And Thiago Silva, I think, may be his biggest competition for best centre-back in the world, taking into account how they're playing right now, as well as your general level and reputation. And yeah, I think Araujo is right in there, right in that top five. Incredible stuff.
So what we're saying is the best three centre-backs in the world are Ronald Araujo, Thiago Silva and Tim Ream.
That's
what we've got to, right? That's where we're at right now. Okay, on that, we should probably move onwards. Sam, what have you got for me?
Yeah, I'll go to France and I'd like to talk about the resurgent Nantes team in Ligue 1 because this is pretty heartwarming. They were one of my favourite stories last season. We talked about them on the pod a little bit because they punched well above their weight. They battled away for 6th or 7th place in Ligue 1 for ages, and they did just fall short in the end. They ended up in 9th, but they won the cup and they qualified for Europe as a result. Amazing achievement for this club, genuinely amazing. Then they went into the summer. They lost Randall Kolo Muani to Eintracht Frankfurt for free. Like, look at him now. They spent all summer fending off bids for Ludovic Blas, who nearly joined Lille. Marseille tried to buy, and I think he's going to leave this summer anyway, but they managed to hold on to him. And really, like, the only player of note they signed was Moussa Sissoko from Watford. It's like, well, how's that for gearing up for a European campaign? You lose your best player, you nearly lose your second best player, and you only sign Moussa Sissoko, who got relegated from the Premier League. So then you add in the fact that they come in on under a cloud, then they've got the 6 European games, the schedule's tough before the World Cup, and guys, they really spiraled. September, October, November, relegation places. But they resemble Union Berlin here in a way where the winter break has just done them a world of good. They get to reset and recharge. And they've come out of the World Cup break. And I'm delighted to tell you that they have won 4 and drawn 2 of 7 league games. They conceded twice to Marseille in the loss, but all of the other games have been clean sheets, 6 clean sheets out of 7. And they've won 2 cup games domestically in that span as well. So they're back. They're absolutely back. And they've got Juventus in the Europa League on Thursday. So this game for Juve, when it was drawn, when we always make this, you know, we always draw this line and say, well, you know, things can change. Juve would have been looking at this draw in December and gone,
licking their lips.
All right, then. All right, then. And now they should be genuinely really quite scared because this is proper upset alert territory. Proper upset alert. Not a horrible to play against. They have a real bend but don't break philosophy. A lot of last-ditch defensive actions. A lot of absorbing pressure. Not huge amounts of goal threat, but enough to get them through. And they're just like really sticky. They're just a horrible team to play against. And Juve, I think, are going to find this really difficult, particularly over 2 legs. And they might come unstuck.
Yeah, maybe. It's a very interesting one. There's a lot of very interesting ties in the Europa League and the Europa Conference League, as you might know. They will be highlighted, or the best of them will be highlighted, on our YouTube channel on Thursday morning when UE Ultras returns with a vengeance. So I'm excited to share that with you guys as well. With that, I think it's probably time for us to move into our main segment. That is all for things we love on our Valentine's Day record. We'll see you after the break.
Walk the dogs, school drop-off, meetings from 10 to 3, take kids to soccer, then no time left for a jog.
When everyone else is relying on you, it's easy to put your needs last. BetterHelp connects you with a licensed therapist online, so you can show up for yourself the way you do for others. Find more balance with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com.
Welcome back to Ranks FC, where it's time for our main segment. We are ranking every Premier League captain. Now, we did this before. I tell you, boys, it doesn't feel like this long ago, but it was on the 28th of October, 2020, nearly two and a half years ago. It was the third ever episode of Ranks FC, just after that shift from VR Football Ranks. It was, you know, a long time ago. So I'm excited to get back to this. I'm excited to have a look at it and see where we've got to, who's still around, who's changed. So Sam, I'm just going to hand the floor to you and get in it. We're still here. Still here. I'm still wearing this armband.
I was going to say, most importantly, who's the captain? Have we deposed Jack Collins yet? I'm sure we've made him walk the plank at this point. We tried to fire him the other week.
Yeah,
we
keep trying to. Yeah, but unfortunately, nothing works and I'm not here. So you've had to bring me back on a short-term freelance contract. But I'll take the armband straight back. Thanks very much.
Well, your captaincy very much resembles number 20 in our list, Luka Milivojevic of Crystal Palace, who is it's a surprise, really, that he is still at the club. They've definitely tried to move past him. He was once very important, but no longer. He has two starts this season and they bought two new central midfielders, or loaned to, loaned and bought two central midfielders in January. So Milivojevic, soon to be gone, we assume. 19th, Pontus Janssen. Six starts for Brentford this season. Four centre-backs have all played more. So not exactly a key player for them, but holds the armband.
18th, he has been injured. I will give Pontus Janssen some credence in that he hasn't been fit for most of the campaign. But you're right in that there are better players at Brentford.
There are, particularly with the arrival of Ben Mee as well. And Ethan Pinnock just continues to go and go and go. Number 18, Jamal Lascelles. 108 Premier League minutes this season. I was surprised to learn that he's still the captain. You know, they've got this well-oiled machine going on. They've got 14 or 15 very good players. He's not in that collection of players. They've obviously got new leaders on this pitch in form of like Kieran Trippier. I presume he's vice-captain, but Jamal Lascelles still holds the armband, but he's in 18th. Actually, genuinely struggle to remember how good he is because it's been a while. Number 17, it's a little run of centre-backs here, Joe Worrall of Nottingham Forest. He's one of three men on this list captaining their local club, so bonus points for that. He's a handy centre-back. He's doing okay on his step up to Premier League level. That's probably as far as I'd go. And then let's round off the bottom five here. Number 16, Seamus Coleman of Everton. Hell of a servant to Everton. 34 now, edging towards that twilight part of his career. And I think ultimately they're backup right back for when Nathan Patterson is fit. So I struggled to put Coleman in here because I couldn't figure it out. I wanted to pay him the respect he deserved, but his current level is probably here about 16th.
Yeah, wonderful footballer and an incredible Premier League right back. I think when you look back at the career he's had in the Premier League, especially when you remember that he was signed for 50 grand. The song goes, from, I believe, Sligo Rovers. To come in and make the kind of impact that he's had and be at the top level for fullbacks for so long, I agree. But I do think that Seamus is coming to the twilight, as you say, of his career. Would have been interesting to see if Everton had stuck with a back three, if he would have been able to do the kind of Cesar Azpilicueta, I'm sure we'll talk about him, job on the right-hand side of a back three. But that hasn't really materialized and it doesn't look like he's, well, I think you're right in that he's coming to the end. I don't want to say anything negative about Seamus. I love the man. He was once very nice to me. Sam once watched me melt when he said hello to me. when we were at Millwall away in the FA Cup with Everton, and Seamus Coleman
captain
nodded
to captain,
and said, "How
you
yeah.
talking, were
And I just, and I just sort of melted.
He said, "How you?" Didn't he? Nice.
How yeah?
And nodded oh, yeah. and nodded at you, and you just died. it was so cute.
Really nice day. So love Seamus to pieces, but I think, as you say, he's coming to the end. Can't really argue with much of that. I would have probably had Janssen ahead of Lascelles. I think when he's fit, he probably has more of a role to play for Brentford than Lascelles has for Newcastle now. But I'm not going to argue with the 17th, 18th.
Yeah, I mean, it's much of a muchness down there at certain points, isn't it? You know, Lascelles and Janssen and Worrell, I'm like trying to figure out. And they're all like fringe Premier League level centre-backs. Sometimes it's about personal preference on that one. But I'll move into number 15 in the next tranche. 15, we've got another centre-back who is Liam Cooper of Leeds. He's pretty good. That's what I've written down for him. He's pretty good. Good player. And then number 14, Johnny Evans, another centre-back. I'm swimming in them, guys. And this is why it's really hard to figure out. Like, I've got five here. Evans, Cooper, Worrell, Lascelles, Janssen. They're all relatively
similar. These are mainly players I
level.
Forgot were in the Premier League, mate. This isn't really like, this doesn't sound like a captain's ranking to me so far. I'm like actually quite shocked at what the list of names
it's
we're going through.
It's quite interesting, isn't it? It's one of those things where you're looking at and going, who's actually the captain and who's the captain week in, week out, right? And this is the area where you're looking at these and going, none of these people wear the armband on a regular basis because they're not on the pitch. And that's the actual, you know, the crux of it down the bottom of this list. So many club captains are kind of aging servants who have done an absolutely stalwart job for the club, fair play, you know, deserve all the flowers and respect, but no longer have the capacity to actually impact games at Premier League level on the pitch. That's where we're at.
Yeah, I think Evans is the epitome of this one because he's finally sort of slowed down a bit now. A bit like Seamus Coleman, like he's just gone on forever. He's probably been criminally underrated at certain points in his career, Johnny Evans. He's had a hell of a career, but he's 35 now, had some injuries, and he has dropped off a bit. You're right about that assessment of those players, although Joe Worrell does feel like an exception there because he's a relatively consistent starter for Forest, and he's mid-20s rather than, you know, 30 to 35. But I've put Evans in at 14th. And at 13, I've gone for TC, Tom Kearney.
Why?
Doesn't play very much either.
Doesn't play much. He's one of the most important players. He comes on every week.
He comes on every week.
He does. He has a role where he comes on at a certain time and helps us see out the game. This is bad. This is a bad call.
We were talking about this on Monday, right? We were talking about the concept of starters and finishers. And Marco Silva, Tom Kearney is one of Marco Silva's finishers. He comes on to control games, to slow the pace down a little bit, to provide incision when Fulham are chasing a goal, and to completely and utterly just keep the ball when Fulham are ahead. And I think that Tom Kearney is playing as like the best football that he's played in ages, to be perfectly honest with you, from a Fulham perspective. But I can see, considering the minutes played and the perception within that, why he would be here. I'll be interested to see who the next couple are, and then I can have an argument with you instead of doing it before I know who's ahead of him.
I mean, like, I was going to put Kearney lower, but then, Jack, you sent me that video of him scoring that goal against Sunderland, which was just awesome. So
an FA Cup goal against Sunderland has swayed your decision on how good a captain he is.
No, this is just him as a player, and he's nowhere near as influential on this Fulham team as he was a couple of years ago. He's much more influential than he was a year ago, but he doesn't start for you because he doesn't quite fit the manager's style, right? Like, I assume it's the fact that
his body doesn't fit the style. I think he's just got better players now ahead of him.
Well, that's why he's 13th, mate. Yeah.
Anyway, as Jack says, we've hit a hot spot here. You'd got away scot-free up to number 13, and obviously we're going to jump on that.
I mean, this is where I get nervous. So at number 12, I've put Azpilicueta, who I still think is probably a better footballer than Tom Kearney, although it is very difficult to judge these things across positions. Someone else who was dropped off a few levels, but very smart and has been very good. And I'll finish off the next set with number 11, which may be the most surprising name on the list, mostly because I bet most people don't know that he is Bournemouth's captain, Neto. Neto got made captain the other week. The goalkeeper.
Did they take it off Kelly?
They took it off Lloyd Kelly and gave it to Neto.
Does Lloyd Kelly not start most weeks? Seems a bit rude to take the captaincy off him.
he's been injured. So yeah, I don't know. They've given it to Neto. So Bournemouth, 33-year-old Brazilian goalkeeper, as if that's not weird enough as a sentence, is now captain of the football club after 6 months in the area. Interesting. Blimey. And Neto's perfectly fine, serviceable goalkeeper.
Yeah, Neto's grand. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely no problem with that. It's just weird to think about, like as a concept, right? Like, sorry, come again? What?
Yeah, I know. It's happened like last week. I'm lucky I caught it, actually. I just Googled everyone's name to check. What? Neto?
Yeah, that's strange. Yeah.
The manager, he calls him Nets, which I thought was quite good. Nets. Yeah, Nets is our
Neto
captain
takes
now.
Too old to say.
Nets is a good influence.
You know he's on a 12-month contract, as in he literally, his contract expires at the end of the season. They've just given him the armband. That seems like bad squad planning, I'll be honest.
It's a manager trying to save his job, I think. He's trying to save his job, and clearly this is one of his reasons as to how he's trying to do it.
Well, I mean, look, if we can take anything away from these first 10 names, is that it is not a prerequisite to actually play football and have a massive influence on the pitch to hold the armband. And so Neto getting it as a starter is still a better situation than most of the lads at the bottom, you know, Milivojevic and Lascelles and Johnny Evans and stuff like that, who really aren't in the first choice 11s.
Yeah, I get that. I think it's going to be interesting to see how it goes onwards from here. There's not all that much to argue with, I think, in that, if I'm honest. It's maybe Worrell should be higher, I think, maybe just about a couple of places. I think Lascelles should be below Janssen, but it's only a one-place swap. And I wanted to argue with you about TC, but I don't really have the capacity to, I don't think.
We still can. We think he should be in the top 10, so we haven't heard the top 10 yet.
You said top 5 earlier.
Well, he's going downwards very quickly. But we still see. Right now, the two you put above him, I'm not going to have an argument with, but I'm going to be intrigued to see where you go from here.
Yeah, well, we're still... It's really strange. We don't really get to like, yeah, this is a really solid, like very good player until like the top five. It's astonishing really how mixed the ability levels are in the armband game. But kicking off the top 10 at 10 is John McGinn at Villa, who actually has had a really tough time of things since he got the armband. Gerrard gave it to him and his form immediately plummeted. But there were a few signs of life under Emery, but he got injured again. But the New Year's Day performance against Tottenham was very good. And I think we can all agree that McGinn remains a very good player.
Yeah, I think Villa need McGinn in that team, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I was actually really surprised not to see him play against Man City at the weekend. Yeah, exactly the kind of player who can really bunker down and deal with that kind of game. So he has his strength for sure. Number 9, I'm grinning because... It's a contentious one for you guys. I see Jack is primed for action. At number 9, I'm putting Jordan Henderson of Liverpool. You guys know I'm not his biggest fan. And I think he's dropped a level or two again. He's the best captain on this list. Mm-hmm. But I think he's in the ninth best footballer.
Yeah, I think we never maybe made this completely clear, right? Like, it's not necessarily about their ability to lead. We're not ranking them on their leadership qualities vis-a-vis Football Manager. It's more kind of how good are the 20 captains in the Premier League. That much should be made very clear, I think, because well, I think there are certain names on that list down low. Well, you can, to our point.
No, I can. I feel like... For me to be, if I was to sit there and go, who's the best captain? I would need to be captained by all 20 of these people and then relay my personal experience. I've never met most of these guys. So I can't really tell you the dynamics of it. No one can.
Seamus Coleman, number 1, met him.
Yeah, I've met him, but that's it. So I can't, I'm not, none of us are in a position to truly judge that. We have to rely on what people say and anecdotes. But I can tell you who I think the best footballers are, and I think Henderson is marginally better than McGinn, who is marginally better than Neto, which is a hard comparison to make given one's a goalkeeper. But that's
you're doing a decent job.
Kind of where you end up.
You are doing quite a good job, yeah.
But Henderson at 9.
This is probably fair. It depends who's above him, but I think above McGinn is probably fair. I think McGinn probably is starting to gain more impact. Obviously, when he's played this season, I think you know since the break he's been good, but. Jordan Henderson remains, and I thought last night's performance against Everton was pretty solid. I think if you put the right people around Jordan Henderson, he still has the capacity to thrive. I just don't think he's capable of doing what he once was capable of doing on a football pitch in terms of getting forward. But you look back at the World Cup, and he was clearly a key element of that side and worked really well. And so that's it. If you put the right people around Jordan Henderson, he still has the capacity to influence football games in a really big way. It's just been tricky getting any sort of midfield out of Liverpool this season. And so therefore, I think his stock has plummeted maybe partly as a result of that.
So here's where it gets interesting, because at number eight, I have put another English central midfielder, which allows itself for an extremely direct comparison. Number eight is James Ward-Prowse of Southampton. So basically what I'm saying is I think JWP is better than Henderson, which is probably a contentious point.
Yeah, I think it is. I think but I would argue that JWP's influence on matters on the pitch for Southampton probably trumps Henderson's influence on matters on the pitch for Liverpool right now. But maybe that's not the argument.
I'd say that, Henderson is definitely... his levels are definitely not where they were, whereas Ward-Prowse isn't quite there, but also the team have been an absolute shambles and he's had a lot of pressure on himself to try and lift the gloom. There's been a lot of expectation on him to step up. I think he's taken quite a bit of stick actually compared to any other season I've known at Southampton. He's delivered a couple, he's scored a good goal at Fulham, obviously I was at, but I've seen him score a couple of other important ones too. And now he's got a new manager. So like maybe he actually gets a new life out of here. Like today, as we're recording this, Jesse Marsh getting the Southampton job might be what Ward-Prowse needs. So I think I think James Ward-Prowse is still worthy of being high enough on this list. Yeah, I think he's still got it in him.
I would have flipped them, Sam, but I don't mind it, if you know what I mean.
So I think they're both very good all-round players and they're both really good leaders and they're both very good at the nuts and bolts elements of midfield. But Ward-Prowse has that very special extra talent of free kicks. So I don't think anyone would dispute a top 10 spot for him, but the order of Ward-Prowse, Henderson and McGinn, I think, would differ based on your allegiance and your general experiences.
The problem you've got here is on social media, there are 100,000 times as many Liverpool fans in the world as there are Southampton fans, and you're going to be hearing from them rather than the Saints fans.
Well, maybe. I'll have to spark an army. But we'll move up to number seven, and this is where I put Lewis Dunk of Brighton, who is just one of those players who just goes on and on and on. Still at Brighton, still doing great. Ever-present this season, 21 starts, super solid. Brighton are having another really good season and Lewis Dunk is the captain and he is at the heart of it all again. And this is one of those weird things where like you sit down and you create this list and sometimes you're surprised by what you churn out. And Lewis Dunk, me rating Lewis Dunk as a better overall footballer than Ward-Prowse, Henderson and McGinn is not something you necessarily think is going to happen. But then you look back at it and you go, I think that's about right.
His level is higher, I think, generally across the course of this season. And obviously you can look back historically and you have to do so to an extent. I think that's evident at the bottom half of this table that you've put together of anything. But there does feel like a point where you go, Lewis Dunk has been part of a very good Brighton defence. He's been part of a very good side who are currently higher than both Aston Villa, Liverpool and Southampton in the table. Dunk's effect on that team is massive. And I think he's just been very solid. You know, earlier we mentioned Johnny Evans. This is where Johnny Evans was 3 seasons ago, isn't it? Like this is
probably, yeah.
This is it. He is a reliable, rock solid servant who basically rarely puts a foot wrong and ultimately has meant that he's been raised up this table into a place where he's in a Conference League spot. So it's what Brighton will be hoping for this season. It's what Dunk will be hoping for from his captaincy. I think this is fair, mate. I'll be honest. I think it's fair. I really want to argue with you, but so far I'm finding it very difficult.
There you go. Well, let's argue about this one. Number six, the most polarizing player on planet Earth, Harry Maguire of Manchester United.
Wow. Above Lewis Dunk.
How do we feel?
This is a really hard one, isn't it? Because he hasn't actually done that much wrong in recent times. And even when he was playing badly, the mental stress that he was under feels hard to judge him by when things got so bad. And when you see him at the World Cup doing well, you remember like what he's capable of. He's getting in the United team occasionally still. He might be playing against Barcelona this week. Maybe we should judge it after that. Maybe we should judge it after he's played Barcelona. I don't know. Honestly, like knowing obviously his name was going to be in this list, I was expecting you to stick him in like 15 initially. And I was kind of pleased that I hadn't heard his name in the top 10. I didn't think you would put him this high. I didn't think you would.
I don't think you can put him this high, Sam. I can't sit here and you go, if Jordan Henderson is having a bad
Liverpool
season,
fans are going to go mental about this.
Yeah, and I think they're probably right to. Like you can't sit here and be like, Maguire's had a really bad season. He's had a really bad couple of seasons, but he had a good World Cup, and then put Jordan Henderson three spots behind him. Like it doesn't make sense. Like, it doesn't add up.
Yeah, so I mean, this simultaneously feels too high and too low for Maguire. For me, and I really struggled with it. And you do have to remind yourself of what he's capable at his best, which we saw at the World Cup, genuinely very, very good, and like better than Jordan Henderson showed. So if we can agree that like Maguire and Henderson are having down seasons, but they both had good World Cups, who had a better World Cup? Harry Maguire. So that's kind of one way of rationalizing
Henderson's having a better Premier League season than Maguire, even if he's not playing well, because he's playing to begin with. And
it's marginal, though. It's still marginal.
Negative exposure is worse than no exposure at all in some stakes, because we're just trying to work on what we see. But I find it really hard to put my finger on where he should be. But I think criticism of him is generally overblown. I think he has really good moments and he has really good performances. I think his top level is higher than Dunk and it's higher than Henderson.
I know that I actually really like Harry Maguire, and I think the criticism of him is overblown, but I just don't think on what we've literally witnessed over the past 2 years, it makes any sense to put him here ahead of some of the names you're putting. Yes, in terms of what he's potentially got in the tank, you can put in there, fine. But you're working on potentials, not on actually what they're displaying on a week-to-week basis. And I think that's probably unfair.
But it's difficult when he doesn't play every week. So what I've got to lean on is what he did at the World Cup, which was really good.
You put Jamal Lascelles in 19th because you haven't seen him play for ages. If you're like, we're picking what some player had, that's not right. The fact that he can't get in this team.
You know that Jamal Lascelles is basically like a fringe level Premier League player, whereas Harry Maguire is well beyond that.
Harry Maguire is a Europa League level defender. That's what I've always said. And you know, he's capable of playing for his side.
No, I think that is hard. I think that you're wrong about Maguire being that level. I just think that we'll find out whether United move him on or not. But the way to judge this, how many people just turned off the podcast? We won't know, but I reckon a lot of people aren't listening anymore.
Right. Okay. Here's one for you. Do you think Brighton would sell Lewis Dunk to sign Harry Maguire, or do you think they'd sign him and play him instead of Lewis Dunk?
No, I think there's a better way to scope out. Who would Tottenham sign, Lewis Dunk or Harry Maguire? They'd sign Harry Maguire.
I don't think they would.
I don't think the Brighton question's fair, because remember when I said Joe Royle was one of three men captaining their local teams? Well, Lewis Dunk is one of the three. I think more teams would sign Maguire, but I think that is somewhat reputation-based and somewhat not necessarily fair. The fact that I have them 6 and 7 would suggest that I don't necessarily see that much difference between them.
I mean, listen, when I woke up this morning, I did not think we would be debating Harry Maguire versus Lewis Dunk, but here we are. It's good times.
It's always fun and games on the pod.
Let's leave that slide. Get the VAR stuff.
Well, this is it. If you're listening to this before the Champions League on Wednesday, you're like, why am I not just listening to the Champions League preview? That's last week's episode. You can go back and listen now. Yeah. Right, Sam, let's move on from Maguire and the ag surrounding it. Let's go on.
Okay. Top five. And speaking of Spurs, this is where Hugo Lloris comes in. What's the matter now?
Stop. Well, Hugo Lloris has been dreadful. Spurs fans want him out.
He's a good goalkeeper. He's not elite, but he's a good goalkeeper.
He's the best player we've talked about so far. Yeah.
He is. He is, yeah. He is. World Cup finalist Hugo Lloris, who was excellent against England, annoyingly. Yeah. I don't know what his future holds for him in terms of Spurs moving for next 6 to 18 months, but I think he's a top five player here. I'll move into four swiftly before Jack explodes, and it's going to be Ruben Neves, who is Wolves captain for this season. Probably a fitting one because he's probably in his last campaign with Wolves, and as a bit of an adopted son of the area, it's really quite cool for his final chapter with Wolves to be as a captain. I think he's
Liverpool
really playing up
next
to that.
Season.
He's really playing up to the captain's role. I think he is a proper leader. He's also an absolutely tremendous footballer. Yeah. And I'll take a pause at three to reserve the top two. Declan Rice, captain of West Ham, another tremendous footballer, another future £100 million midfielder probably, and that kind of says it all. We're talking about vastly different levels, aren't we, from four downwards.
Yeah, I was gonna kick off about Neves being too low, but you put Rice ahead. I would probably switch them, but that's just me.
Well, you're Irish and want to be
I love Neves.
That makes sense.
I think Neves is absolutely sensational. Like I really do. I think he's the complete midfielder in so many ways these days. His kind of development from a very, very talented player who came in at Wolves, left at Porto side where he had been the youngest captain ever, came into a Wolves side in the Championship and was the figurehead of that revolution. I think given the fact that Wolves have been a bit up and down, Neves's development into a really, really complete midfielder. I mean, he was good to begin with. He's now excellent. I think sometimes goes under the radar. So I was going to kick off, but I think you're probably okay. And I know who I've worked out who's above him. And I think that maybe four is just about fair in that regard. I might have him three, but I think four is probably.
Yeah, I thought he was older than he is. I've got to say, I was just like,
he started at 17.
What's the age gap here between Rice and Neves? It's 1 year.
Yeah.
Neves is 25 and Declan Rice is 24. I would not honestly have thought that, like given just like what we've seen in their careers so far, I would have thought there was probably 3 years between them. So, that actually does throw up a bit of a conundrum because Wolves' season obviously was disastrous first half. Second half, it's been really good so far and he's been really good so far. Declan Rice, obviously, similar situation at West Ham, like terrible first half of the season. Even some of the West Ham fans were turning on him a little bit, but the last few weeks,
he's been exceptional.
He's been exceptional. Like I've pointed out that Newcastle game recently. I just thought he was outstanding in that game. So you're right. This is a tiny, tiny margin. I think like these two are on a par probably. But they make a good combination in midfield. Maybe someone should just sign the pair of them in the summer. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Quite the duo.
Would be,
I think that'd be very interesting. Fair. I think that's probably about fair. I think there's a gap from, as you say, Sam, from four down. There's some quite clear tier gaps, isn't there, in this? Maybe it's something we can look at some point. But there are very much like the lads who are like, what are you still doing at the club? Then above them, there's like mostly here for morale at this point. Then there's like still making an impact, still leading from the front, genuinely well good. They're the five tiers, aren't they? So let's get into the top two. You're the top of genuinely well good.
Yeah. I mean, this is very difficult to split, two and one. And it was almost a coin flip last night when I was deciding this and I'm reading my notes again and I'm still not sure. But at two, I'm going to put Martin Ødegaard.
No, he hasn't done it. I think
he's a real contender for number one. But and I started this process, I assumed that he would be number one. The lowest he could possibly be, can we agree, is second. This is like the absolute floor for Martin Ødegaard. He is unbelievable footballer, unbelievable season. A genuine surprise choice to me as captain, actually, of Arsenal Football Club. But I think he's carrying out the role really well. He's turned out to be a good pick. And his importance to this team is, knows no bounds. So that means that number one, and just pipping him, and I'm sort of paying my respects to a very, very good footballer over a long period of time, is Ilkay Gundogan of Man City. I think Odegaard is having a better season than Gundogan. I don't think you'll find many people disagreeing with that.
I don't think there are many people having a better season than Martin Ødegaard, to be perfectly honest.
But I think I'd say Gundogan is probably the better overall player, generally speaking. And I think he probably deserves a nudge of respect. And I think he might just fall into that category where if you're very, very good for a very long time, you get passed over just a tiny bit sometimes when your eyes are attracted to the bright new flowers. And by that, I mean someone like Odegaard's emergence over the last 12 months. There's not a lot in this, but I'll take Gundo at one and Odegaard at two.
I'm sure there'll be a lot of Arsenal fans screaming at their headphones right now. But I don't mind it as much as I mind some of your other ones. I don't know. I might have shaded Ødegaard one just in the form he's in, but I think you're absolutely right in that Gundogan deserves all the respect for the consistency of performance as well. Like, can you recall in Ilkay Gundogan having bad games for Manchester City? He's just always minimum 7 out of 10 every week. He just delivers time and time and time again. And in a season where City have been chopping and changing and things have, you know, mucked about and Pep's been doing full Pep at times, Gundogan has seemed to be like a relatively sensible head of calm in the middle of it. And I do think the City just look much better with him on the pitch. You know, those late runs into the box, he obviously scored that goal against Villa at the weekend. He scored the goals that took City to the title at the end of last year. It's kind of understated, I think, the amount he plays a role in this City team and the amount that Pep trusts and loves him. And that's got to be worth something, right?
Do you know, I think it's Ødegaard at one. I think I'd have gone Ødegaard. There's so many ways you can try and weigh this up, and it is extremely difficult. I wouldn't have wanted to put this list together at all. So fair play for even attempting it. There's just so many factors that you have to try and account for here. Like, these two guys are completely different ends of their career too. Like, Gundogan might be his last season at Man City, like 32. They're looking to, you know, obviously move into another new era at Man City to keep progressing. And Arsenal have just done that by putting all their faith in Ødegaard as the face of the new era. But what they've done and what Odegaard's done so impressively is actually managed to live up to the expectations that were laid on him from the age of about 14. And he consistently was unable to reach because he just kept being sent out on a loan. I just quickly like looked at what the loans were. It's like from Real Madrid, it was like Heerenveen, Vitesse, Real Sociedad, then Arsenal. And it just looked like the guy wasn't going to get the break. Like, he should probably be in the Real Madrid team.
That Real Sociedad. He was unbelievable in that Real Sociedad loan. He was absolutely outrageous for them.
The will and the belief in himself to keep going through those times when still people are starting to doubt him too. Like, that's the toughest thing. We've seen a lot of players, once they get to 20 and they've been hyped up for the last 5-6 years, struggle to live up to that, billing. I can't even imagine like what that's like mentally, to have everyone expect you to be the best player on the pitch every time you walk out there, especially if you're struggling to do it. And he's got to Arsenal and he's done it so well that they've made him captain and now they're top of the league. Like, I say they're top of the league. They might not be by the time some people listen to this, but they're in a title race at the very least with him as the captain. And he is the best player in the league over the course of this season so far. He's been the standout player, like Haaland, obviously for different reasons, but Ødegaard as a footballer, the consistent performance levels, I think he's probably won, you know.
It's a very compelling argument, Dean.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's a good argument, and I appreciate it. I think this is a very, very tough call. There's a hair's breadth between them at the very best, right? This is where we're at, and that's credit to Ødegaard. To be honest, the fact that he's in the same conversation as someone like Ilkay Gundogan, who's been so wonderful for so many years, is testament to what he's put on the pitch this season and what he's delivered for Arsenal.
It kind of reflects the title race though, doesn't it? Because we keep saying credit to Arsenal for even being in this discussion, credit to Ødegaard for even being in this discussion, yet we're all going to give just the edge to Man City anyway. I just presume Man City win the league. I just presume Gundogan is a bit of a better player. Like, it's just that thing because of what we've watched in years gone by, and like Man City have just always been a step above of everybody else. So we're struggling in our mindset to accept that anything
that might
Arsenal,
have changed, yeah.
Yeah, that could change right now, like so suddenly and so unexpectedly.
Maybe that is it. We're only human after all. We have our biases and we have our things to overcome. Maybe the fact that Arsenal didn't win at the weekend and Gundogan was so good. You never know. Maybe that, like, yeah. that literally that, because we're talking about a hair's breadth, maybe that influenced me. I don't know. I watched Gundogan like run the show on Sunday. Maybe that's the difference. Maybe if you ask me next week, I've got it two and I've got it the other way around. But
maybe on Thursday.
Either way, it's very tough. It's very tight. I mean, the good battle between Rice and Ruben Neves for third. Great battle between Gundogan and Odegaard for first. And a hell of a battle. A hell of a battle between Pontus Janssen and Luka Milivojevic for 20th.
I'll never forget the Lewis Dunk Maguire. Oh, that'll live with me forever.
That'll be with you for a long, long time to come.
Yeah, on my deathbed, I'll be thinking, nah, Maguire, Dunk, that was the moment. That was the moment.
That was where it was.
Of our,
yeah.
That was when
Ranks
peaked.
Went Pete Tong.
Yeah,
exactly. All right, right on that, we should probably move on to our third and final segment. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to part three of the Ranks FC podcast, where it's time for our stalwart finishers to return. And Dean Jones, first and foremost, the floor is yours.
It's time for Melon of the Week. This week's Melon of the Week is Malik Tillman of Glasgow Rangers. If you haven't seen this, you need to go and watch it as soon as I've finished describing it. So chaos in Scotland, a cup game at the weekend, and it all started in the 70th minute with the ball was knocked out of play so that Tillman could actually get some treatment on a knock he'd received. So they're playing against Partick Thistle. And what ensued was nothing other than chaos, to be honest. Partick looked to resume play with the throw in, and they were going to, looked like they were going to stick the ball downfield so that Rangers could have possession of the ball back deep in their own half and they could start again from there. Tillman didn't really get it. What he decided to do was nick the ball off the defender, run through on goal and stick it in the net. Partick went.
It's a great finish to be fair. He goes around the keeper really well.
He does. Not okay. Yeah, he was basically like thrown around by a few different players. Partick like totally lost it. They kind of gave him the treatment that Chelsea fan got at West Ham. and the video that went, not quite as bad, but wasn't far off, because Partick was so mad about what had happened. They were like, you can't do this. This is totally unsporting of you. Not sure he totally understood what had gone wrong, to be honest. I don't think he really had an awareness. And the referee, totally powerless in this situation. Like, he can't do anything about it. It's a legitimate goal. It's just he's kind of broken a code of conduct. Luckily, Michael Beale decides to do the right thing. Like, all chaos is going around, and he's like, lads, just let them score. Just let him score. Let him have the ball. So Partick, like, they're still, you know, there's
smoke
coming out
there. Ballistic, by the way.
Yeah,
there's absolutely livid that Rangers.
It could have been an actual riot. There could have been a riot. This is a great game, by the way. Like, it was a really good match. Rangers nicked it right at the death. But look, Partick, they did equalise just about. They ran the ball from the halfway line. Alan McGregor, the Rangers goalkeeper, pretended right at the last second he wasn't going to let it happen. He jumped in the way and he made the Partick lad a bit nervous, and there was a nervous laugh as he knocked the ball into the open net in the end. But Tillman, mate, it's Melanish. Read the room. You're Melon of the Week.
there were some strong contenders this week for Melon of the Week, but I think you're probably right to send it to Ibrox. Malik Tillman not understanding the code of the game. Very amusing. Thankfully, justice was served. Anyway, Rangers won in the end anyway, so it didn't really matter.
3-2. Good game.
At the end of the day. Great game. Great game in the Scottish Cup. Right. Shout out of the week, Dean.
Yeah, it is time for Shout Out of the Week. Keep your reviews coming in, people. This week's Shout Out of the Week is Nick Corbo. What a lovely few words this lad has sent in. Anyone that reads this is just going to think, this sounds like the best podcast in the world. So he gave us the 5 stars, obviously. He said, hello, Rank Squad. After hearing Dean's desperate pleas for more reviews, I decided it was time to do my due diligence and submit a review of the wonderful Ranks FC podcast. First and foremost, while it's fresh in my mind, I'd like to thank you lads for hosting a YouTube live stream for a transfer deadline day. I really enjoyed the interactive component and you all even answered some of my questions. I would love more of these interactive YouTube sessions if possible. That will be granted in the very near future, Nick. So you will be seeing more of us very soon. He said, also, I was blown away by your Bilbao documentary. I could tell there's a plethora of diligent labour. God, blimey, the words this guy's using. Conscientious interaction involved in its creation. The overarching familial narrative was well portrayed. I don't know how I'm even reading this. It's so well written.
Is this Jack's burner?
Yeah, I know. Would I have loved to see Jack bamboozled and disoriented while lost in the streets of Bilbao? Nothing digs into a man's ego quite like the feeling of a way finding helplessness. I also greatly appreciate how active all three of you are on Twitter. This can't be about me. It really supplies loving listeners like myself with supplementary rank sustenance to keep us satiated until the next podcast. Blimey. All the best. Keep up the outstanding content, Nico. Nice one, Nick.
That gets a pulis of that, doesn't it?
That was a hard read, but it was a lovely review. Thanks, mate.
No, beautifully written, absolutely stunning.
Was it you?
I can't ask for more than that. It wasn't me. Mm. I wouldn't slag myself off about getting lost, would I? This is just one of my points of interest.
It might have been a cover up.
Oh yeah, you never know. I also want to give a shout out to the man who came up to me at Ealing Broadway Station yesterday and was like, "Love the pod, mate. Keep podding." When I was wearing my Ranks hoodie, so that was a nice touch. I enjoyed.
It's always a nice treat, isn't it?
Well, indeed, it was. It really was. Right. After no gibberish last week with Sam's absence, we're back in business.
Okay, this week I am going to rank the three things that have defined this past week in this household. And I'll let everyone know the context. My wife, Rachel, had surgery last week. Nothing hugely concerning, but she was under general anaesthetic, which does take a little bit of time to shake off. And she's had some stitches in her abdominal area, so she hasn't really been able to move very much. In fact, she couldn't move at all for 3 days and then couldn't move much for another three. That's why I wasn't on the pod last week, for those wondering. I was kind of in like full-time carer mode. But she's much better now, which is great. And I asked her yesterday, I said, how would you define, what things would define the last week for you? Because it has been a bit of a bizarre week in recovery. And she came up with the following three things. At number three is forgetfulness. And you would think, you would hope that this is a reference to her, the one who had surgery. But it's not. It's actually, unfortunately, it's a reference to me. Because I am very, very forgetful, unfortunately. And all week, I had to bring her stuff. She couldn't get herself anything, you know, breakfast, lunch, dinner, any drinks, anything at all, really. And I would always say, want anything from the kitchen? And she'd always give me a list of, you know, 2, 3, 4 things or whatever, just basic items. And I would always return, almost without fail, having forgotten at least one of them. I would never, ever, ever come back with the full list. And we're talking like, a cup of tea, a bottle of water and a pen, and I'd forget one of the three. Or a tea, a biscuit and some Vaseline, and I'd forget one of the three. And just my record for achieving sort of 66 or 75% of the list is astounding. And I've come to the conclusion that my short-term memory appears to be absolute garbage.
Who did you put at number one in the ranking earlier?
Yeah. I think it was Odegaard.
Yeah, exactly.
See, I am really, too, really mate. Tayson, it's not short-term memory. It's either selective memory or present-mindedness. Now, I think mine is present-mindedness because I don't think I have that, especially if she's talking. That sounds probably worse than it. You know, sometimes you're like, I am listening to this, but you're either like on your phone at the time or you're thinking about something else. And you're like,
I'm trying to work out who Fire and Order are going to start in attack in the next game.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. And I'm just like, yeah, present mindedness. That's it. I don't actually listen to what you're saying and take in the information like I would do if Sam was giving a spotlight. I'm not listening to the details here, and this is probably more important than me listening to something about football.
I don't agree with that. Still. But okay, good to know I'm not alone. Rach was looking it up, and apparently there is a thing where, like, unless you genuinely commit something to your memory, like on purpose, then you are liable to forget it because it's unimportant. You know, your brain has so much capacity. Just write unless it down you sit there and go, right, cup of tea, pen, Vaseline, cup of tea, pen, Vaseline. Unless you like do that a couple of times, you may just forget one, and it's okay. It's okay. That's how I've decided to.
That's how you're going to phrase it.
It's three things.
All right.
It's three things.
Okay.
Yeah. It's come on then. It's really bad. Number two, jelly. Rach made herself a gigantic bowl of jelly pre-surgery so that she could enjoy it while she was recovering. I don't know how many of you out there are making jelly frequently. Not me, but she used six packets of gelatin and layered them on top of each other in a gigantic metal bowl that took up about half of the fridge. We're talking liters and liters of jelly.
She could be back in hospital before you know it.
Yeah, exactly. That doesn't sound good for you, man. No.
Abdominal injury. Now let's add another, let's have a layer to this misery.
You're full of gelatin now. We'll have to operate again.
Jelly belly takes on a whole new meaning here.
It was a problem for two reasons. First of all, because it took up so much space in the fridge, everything else was all crowded together in a bit of a mess. And I don't know how specific you guys are, but in my fridge, certain things go in certain areas because otherwise I forget they exist. And I had all sorts of chaos going up on the top shelves, you know, mayonnaise next to the broccoli, next to the steak pie. And it just felt uncomfortable because I had to make room for this jelly. And the second problem is that she only had two spoonfuls of it. And then I had to throw the rest away because she got bored of it.
Oh my goodness.
Six packets of gelatin into a gigantic bowl, six layers of it. She had two large spoonfuls and I had to melt the rest away in hot water in the sink. It took me about 5 minutes to get rid of it all. It was that much.
That is dreadful. That's also a waste. Dreadful waste. And also like, what? In so many ways. Our old designer, old friend of this pod, Mateus Marcello at Bleacher Report, used to just almost exclusively eat jelly. I went to his house once and there was two things in the fridge full of little bowls of jelly, like just bowls and bowls and bowls of it. It was really quite weird. He just ate jelly.
Well, he's like,
it was very
a
strange.
Fittest man alive.
Basically, he only ate protein and jelly. He ate no carbs. I was like, I don't think this is good for you, my guy. But it seemed to be working because he was
chicken and jelly. That was it.
He was absolutely stacked. So fair play to him. A healthy man in appearance at the very least.
It was working.
Exactly. But when you
go around there and you go to the fridge to put a couple beers in, you open it and it's just packed with jelly. It is a real conversation starter.
Let's put it that way. Right. Yeah. What's number one, Sam?
Number one is Hogwarts Legacy. It's been a blessing, guys. An absolute blessing. Not only is it an amazing game, but if you are recovering from surgery and you are not really able to move too much, it's just a gift from the gods when a brand new excellent game drops and you can just sort of hunker down on the sofa and play it. Like, very good timing, very lucky. And it arrived on Thursday and starting Friday, morphing into Saturday, Sunday, and then pretty much all of Monday as well. It's basically just been that on the TV. I've played a bit, but Rach has played an awful lot. And every bit of football I watched from Friday through to Monday, I was relegated to a laptop and AirPods in the chair in the corner because the TV is for Hogwarts Legacy.
I think this is fair, and given that Rachel has not been well, so I think you don't begrudge it. It's one of those as she recovers, and with that, I think we should just wish her all the best in that recovery.
Yeah,
and I hope that it's all good. The fact you're back on the pod suggests that things are going well, so that's good news at the very very least. And with that, boys, I think it's probably time for us to call it a day. All that's left for me to do is say thank you very much to our rank god, Mr. Sam Tai.
Cheers, mate.
Thank you very much to our transfer guru, Mr. Dean Jones.
Cheers, mate.
I've been Jack Collins, Knave of Hearts. This has been Ranks AFC, ranking all of the Premier League captains for the first time in 2.5 years. We hope that you've enjoyed it. We hope you enjoy all the football this week as we get back into the swing of European things. We're going to have an extra pod dropping this week on the main feed as we do a Champions League review. That will be out first thing on Thursday morning. So double drop on the Ranks FC feed this week. Thank you as ever for listening, and we will see you next time. Take it easy, gang. Peace.
Walk the dogs, school drop off, meetings from 10 to 3, take kids to soccer, then no time left for a jog.
When everyone else is relying on you, it's easy to put your needs last. BetterHelp connects you with a licensed therapist online, so you can show up for yourself the way you do for others. Find more balance with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com.